ladies and gents. Welcome to another episode of DFV. I'm your co-host, Black Cinephile.
And I'm your co-host, Brad.
There's your co-host, Brad. And on this one, we got a twofer here that we meant to do a little earlier in the year, but you know, due to scheduling constraints, we had to wait till both of these hit video on demand. So we're doing this episode is called Quest for Vengeance. And we're doing Dev Patel's directorial debut, Monkey Man, versus Moritz Moore's film, Boy Kills World. And I feel like these two films came at the right time because they both follow these two characters' quest for vengeance. But both films are different. One takes the quest for vengeance way more seriously. The other one takes in kind of a dark comedic fashion, but you both have these strong characters here that you know are on a quest to fulfill their destiny,
right? And it's both of them are actually on that quest from childhood too, so it actually works out as like a great pairing of them growing up to take over or get their revenge for what was done to them as children. And completely different ways of storytelling on these two. But thematically, they match up pretty well.
They do. They actually do, man. And I remember when Monkey Man and Boy Kills World was in theaters, and I was saying like, "Hey, you know, Brad, did you get a chance to see it yet?" And you, I know you tried. Did you end up seeing either of these in theaters, or you had to wait till?
I had to wait for video on demand for both of them because for whatever reason, Monkey Man never played in any of the major theaters. They were always in like that side theater that has like two rows of seats. And it's like, I'm not going to go to the theater for that one. And then Boy Kills World, that one, by the time I was like, oh, yeah, that's in theaters, isn't it? I looked and it was already out of theaters.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. Yeah, Monkey Man, they had it in Dolby for a short second, and then it was in regular theaters. I saw Boy Kills World in a regular theater, but you know, it still was a good experience. All right. Well, I'm ready to get into this thing. What about you?
Oh, I am ready.
Okay, awesome. Now listen, I know this is controversial here, and you know, I'm not trying to start off June on the wrong foot. I think we should go with Monkey Man first, just to like get the more somber tale of vengeance out the way, and then go for the more comedic side.
You know what? I agree with that. That's probably a good way to go over this one because we can get the real serious movie out of the way, and then we can start talking about what is Boy Kills World.
Right. You know, let's just get the serious stuff out the way. All right. So we got Monkey Man, you know, directed, co-written, and starring Dev Patel. I hope I'm saying his name right, but Dave Patel of, you know, Slumdog Millionaire fame, you know, a lot of other films we know for Chappie, the Newsroom Show, the Green Knight film. So this is his directorial debut, and we'll go into the backstory and everything later. But Monkey Man pretty much deals with a character by the name of Kid. Kid is a man who grew up with his mother, Neela, who, you know, inspired him with the tales of Hanuman, you know, the monkey man. He witnesses his mother get brutally killed. She is killed by the corrupt police chief, Rana Sin, who is a henchman for the ruthless spiritual guru, Baba Shakti. So Kid witnesses this, and Kid grows up and he becomes a monkey maxed fighter in the boxing club where, you know, he gets paid to lose. So the story of Monkey Man, the thing about a film like this is that it doesn't start off with him being a badass. It shows him on the actual hero journey of learning how to fight, learning to gain his strength, learning to be the legend of the Monkey Man and enact vengeance. He starts off pretty green as an adult. So we're really following him on this journey for him to like learn his destiny on, you know, avenging his mother and coming into terms with the spirit of Hanuman, you know, the tales that he grew up with. And that in a sense is the film Monkey Man. And I feel like what makes this film work so damn well is that it takes its time with the story. It puts the story before the action.
Yeah. That's not to say that the action is anything less than absolutely perfect in this movie as well.
Of course.
I will say, like, when it comes to the choreography of this movie, it's absolutely down pat beautiful to watch these fight scenes as he's going through, like, the kitchen, as he's going through just the mobs of people, everything like that. It's absolutely a blast to watch. And it's saying something when that's not even the focus of this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's a nice balance too. Mm-hmm. Like, so what I mean to say is that it's not that story substitute action. It's just that story and action are balanced. Like, you know, this is the kind of action film that you like to see where you actually follow the hero on the hero's journey. You know, you're not following John Wick, where John Wick is already a badass from the older days, and he's already kicking behind. You know what I mean? Like, we're actually seeing Monkey Man grow throughout the film.
Yeah, and I love his introduction too, because we're first introduced to him as he's in these, you know, fighting tournaments that are happening where he plays the Monkey Man, and then you have other characters in this storytelling, like the Cobra, you have the you have all these other fighters, and he's paid based on how much he bleeds. You know, it's called a blood match. You know, you're supposed to bleed in order to get it. It just reminds me of, like, the Spider-Man, you know, Tobey Maguire one, where it's, he gets paid for half of the fight, and he's like, where's the full amount? You only fought for half the amount, kid. You only get half the pay. And you basically have that scene in here where he's like, hey, this is only half of what I'm supposed to be getting. You didn't bleed as much as you're supposed to. It's called a blood match, you know? And I love how you get to introduce to him as he's like, he lives in these slums, and he's getting ripped off by the slums themselves as well. And he has the opportunity to start working for the company that is owned by, you know, what's her name? Sita, who.
Sita.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so he sees this opportunity to get in and, you know, get his revenge. And that's where he starts really taking things seriously and training and everything.
Wait, you sure? I think Sita was the girl that, like, he had a kinship with. I think it was I think Queenie Kapoor was the one that owned the club. If I'm not,
it could be that she. Yeah. I think you're right.
Okay. I get what you're saying, but I know the character you're talking about. Yeah.
Yep. So he sees the opportunity to kind of get in everything, and I like that. That's when his revenge plot starts coming together. It's not so much he was, as a kid, like, going for revenge. It's the opportunity arose, so he's going for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love the balance here because, you know, when we see him, you know, he's hustling. You know, he's doing the blood matches, trying to get his money together. Now, when the opportunity presents itself where he's able to, like, come closer to his enemy, I like how it sets the film in motion. And, you know, we meet some interesting characters, right? We meet a character that, you know, like, kind of helps him out on his journey. Like, I forgot what the young fella's name was, but the guy that
About Alfonso, the one that
Alfonso, yep,
the guy that runs the club more or less.
Right. The guy that runs the club more or less, and, you know, he knows the ins and outs. Like, I like their friendship. I like their kind of, like, relationship. And, you know, as we're meeting these characters, you know, and we see Kid fight for the first time, I like how Dave Patel kind of shows it, kind of like, okay, this guy isn't a pro from the get. You know, you got to give him some grace. Like, right. I like how there's the one scene. I love this visual gag where, you know, Kid is trying to escape. He runs through a window. He can't even crash through it. He just falls back.
Right. Well, it also, the scene where he's, like, buying the gun is, it's comedic in a way where he's just like, I need a gun. What kind? Something close range. Well, we have this, and this. Something close range.
Right. He's a little out of his depth.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, you know, the thing about the direction of this film is that, you know, I like how Dave Patel, you know, he was originally going to have Neil Blomkamp, who he's worked with on a couple films, you know, direct this film. But, you know, Blomkamp declined. And he suggested Dave direct it himself. So one thing he wanted to do was that he wanted to give the film real soul, you know, real trauma and real pain, and infuse it with, the, you know, a bit of his culture. You know what I mean? A bit of Indian culture. So I like that, because I like that the film is not just like a regular story of vengeance. You know, you have social political themes being said here.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that gives the film a lot of depth in addition to its story, because we see this man fall down and we see him get himself back up, kind of akin to like a Rocky Balboa, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say it, his training montage is a lot of fun too, because
it is,
they don't just go for the standard, like, oh, they're going to just show him doing the standard Rocky montage.
It's the Eye of the Tiger. Yeah. You know?
And they decide to go for it. They do like a nice, like, thematic, you know, thing with it, with, you know, you have the people drumming as he's like punching the bamboo sticks in order to like toughen up and everything. You see him like going through it. It's a lot of fun to watch and everything. And then when you see him like come back to the tournament after that, just watching him, just, what was it? The single kick to the one guy's chest and he's out. It's like, okay, this movie is just cranking it up on the fun meter as it's going along. Yeah. Like, it knows that it's just looking for some fun fights at this point.
Yeah, yeah. He has arrived at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's arrived at this point, and then this is where the film, from an action standpoint, really arrives.
Mm-hmm.
Like, And you know, if there's anything else you want to talk about before we move on here, let me know. But, you know, I love the hallucinogenic experience, the hallucinogenic vision he has. You know what I mean?
While he's doing the training. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that scene. You know, I love his relationship with the young lady. Now, I believe that's who you were talking about with Sita, the lady. Yes. Who is.
That's who I got the names mixed up. But yes, that is Sita.
Right. The lady of the night, who works in the club, so to speak. You know, I like his kinship with her, and I like how they don't go for the sappy romance. It's like, you know that these two have a kinship, but Kid is about business. He ain't got time for romance, but he has time to recognize that this woman comes from struggle like him. They both been through some pretty dark times.
Yeah. Yeah, their little like dynamic is pretty nice too, because, yeah, like you said, they don't push it to the forefront of like, oh, now it's going to be a romance. But at the same time, right, they kind of let their moments linger a little bit. They give us a little bit between them. And one thing that we do have to mention is the flashback montages that are scattered throughout the movie. So basically every time that Kid has like a traumatic like experience, you know, working at the club or something else, including the, you know, hallucination time, we're given like flashbacks showing him as a kid, as an actual kid, experiencing having everything taken from him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say it's probably my only, I wouldn't say complaint, but one thing that I wish that they kind of did differently in the movie was showing these. Because the way that they separate them out, I think it takes away some of the punch that they have. Because if we got like the full flashback sequence, or if it was only cut into like two parts or so, instead of being interspersed to like four or five throughout the movie, we would have a lot more feeling with these as they're going on, instead of it being like an afterthought way of explaining why he's upset at seeing something.
Mm-hmm.
If you get what I'm saying.
I get what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. It's kind of tropey to like, kind of like, you know, show the flashbacks. I didn't mind it. I didn't mind it. I could understand how it could be a little bit of a gripe, like, yeah, they had to go there. But I feel like such a thing is necessary for this film. You know, whether it is tropey, you know, I feel like it is you know, necessary for the formula.
Yeah, I kind of understand for the formula and everything like that, but it always was like, oh, something happened that like triggered him and now he's running off and everything like that. And then it's like, oh, here's the flashback explaining why he got triggered. It's like, I would have rather seen the flashback sequences prior to that, so we can like connect the dots and be like, oh, that's happening. Oh, that's reminds him of what we saw previously as what happened to him as a kid kind of thing. Or he saw this person and now he's, you know, freaking out because he just saw the person that killed his mother. And now, instead of it being like just seeing him see a person freaking out and then we get the flashback showing what happened, I think it would have more impact if we had that information prior to his freaking out.
I get what you're saying. I hear you. So, you know, going from there, you know, I love the setup for like the final fight scene, right? So, you know, when he shows up, I just love how it's go time. I love the scene, and I love how he, you know, Dev pushes the gore up a little bit too. Like, I love that scene where, you know, he's fighting the elevator and he pretty much just bites the guy's jaw off. Yeah, he bites the guy's jaw off. You got that terrific one shot scene where he's like fighting everybody, like the main bar room.
Yeah.
And I love how there's this one point where everybody lines up around him and you're thinking like, okay, he's about to go full on John Wick here. But he's trained enough at this point where you can kind of like say, okay, you can use suspension of disbelief. Mm-hmm. But I like how the film still grounds it in realism. And then his people that helped train him come out of the shadows and start fighting with them. I thought that was so awesome.
Yeah, it was a nice kind of thing because, like you said, you kind of like have the setup there and you're just like, oh, he's going to totally go John Wick on them. And then you have like everybody else coming into the fray to join him on the fight. And it's like, oh, that is such a better way to do this. It gets rid of the expectations, and it also allows them to be like, oh no, he isn't like invulnerable to bullets. You know, he didn't all of a sudden get superpowers. You know, he actually has help in this. And it's a great kind of scene and everything like that. Like, this is where the choreography shines most in this movie.
Yeah, and I love how you got the moment where kid takes one of Sita's kid takes Queenie's severed thumb to get to the penthouse. Like, I love how you're just going up and up here, and then he has that great battle with Reyna, and all of this builds up very well. I love the final confrontation, you know, between, you know, Kid and Baba, you know, when they're just on the rooftop. It feels like, you know, you're really at the final boss at this point. You know, like it feels like I don't want to say a video game because I don't want to, like, you know, look at it in a lesser light. But I like how being at the top brings them to the final boss and the person that, like, you know, puts himself above all the poverty down below. Not puts the monkey man, but the guy that looks at himself as above all the property. Mm-hmm. Like, he's coming face to face with this guy. Right. Yeah, I thought that was a pretty great confrontation.
Yeah, it's a good fight, too, at the end as well, because it's not like full on crazy action. It's more of a slow paced action scene between those two. But you feel the weight of that fight scene, because it's not just constantly like fist flying and everything like that.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And listen, man, I'm glad that you got to experience this film. This film was terrific in theaters. It was just an amazing watch. So I imagine you had a great experience with it, you know, watching it at home, right?
Oh yeah. Absolutely. Okay. But at the same time, I don't think I have like the standard setup of most people. I'm a tech guy and a movie guy. I have a pretty good setup when it comes to watching movies at home.
Yeah, you've told me. You got the projector and everything.
Yeah. So me watching a movie at home isn't the same as like going, oh yeah, let me just pull this up on my phone and watch it. You know, it's almost a movie theater experience.
Good. I'm glad you had that experience. So I want to say before I give my rating here, like, I love the making of this movie. Well, really the distribution of it too. But the making of it, you know, Dev was really flying by the seat of his pants making this film. Like, I had heard that when he shot the first action sequence, he broke his hand. Like, you know, he was really going through it, like, on the director and on the directing and the acting side making this movie.
Yeah.
And when it was initially going to like go to Netflix, because I believe they had sold it for $30 million, you know, you know, Jordan Peele came on and he had said, like, dude, this isn't made for Netflix. Like, this is a theatrical movie here. And he had went to Universal Pictures, which, you know, through his production company, Monkey Paw, he has a deal with, to acquire the film from Netflix for under $10 million. So I like that. Shout out to Jordan Peele for doing that. Because if something like this came on Netflix or was kind of being shopped around and kind of flew under the radar, it would be tragic. It would be tragic to Dev and everybody who was involved with this film. And we would have had a great film not having the chance to be seen by mass audiences.
Yeah. Jordan Peele is one of the strangest cases of somebody that is coming through and like saving Hollywood in the weirdest ways. Because I love all of his movies and everything, but it's always weird to be like, oh yeah, that's the guy that made all the Key and Peele sketches of, you know, the people waiting in front of a building talking about Liam Neeson's, you know, that's the same guy that is going through and being like, hey, Dev, you don't want this one on Netflix, man. This isn't going to work out. You know, let me use my connections to help you get this into a more proper spotlight.
Listen, you never know where someone in Hollywood will end up, man.
Oh yeah.
Like you know, this guy came from Mad TV. Mm-hmm. Him and Keegan-Michael Key, they came from Mad TV, and now Keegan-Michael Key is doing musicals and stuff. Like one of the kids from Freaks and Geeks just co-directed the Dungeons and Dragons movie.
Yeah.
You never know where people end up in Hollywood.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. It's fantastic, especially because there was a period of time where Dev didn't think that this would actually even be able to get made or distributed in any fashion. You know,
yeah.
There was a long road for him to even get to the point that he got to with it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, there's a story of passion behind that. There's a story of, you know, resilience behind that I admire. With all that being said, man, I had a blast with this movie. I had no complaints. Even with the flashback stuff, I still think it's a perfectly made film of vengeance. I give it straight 5 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm pretty close with you there. I have this one at a 4.5 or out of 5.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
is it straight up just because of the flashbacks?
You know what? There are a couple other little things with it where I wanted more from the movie, and it's hard to like fault the movie because I just go, the movie's, you know, I know it has like a 2-hour runtime, but there's right. A couple things where I would have liked to see more of his fights in the ring. I would have liked to see more of that. I would have liked to see a little bit more with his training. I would have liked to see, you know, more after, because the first like 2/3 of it is him just kind of working his way up and everything. The last third is about him finally having, you know, trained and going through it all. And right. There's certain things that it's like, oh, that scene ended too quickly, or I wanted more there, that I kept thinking throughout.
Okay. I can understand that. All right. Gotcha. So you got me at a 5. You're at a 4.5.
Oh, yeah. Very strong 4.5.
All right. I understand. All right. Awesome. All right. Now we are going to move on to the next one here.
Which that movie is going to be Boy Kills World, starring, first off, this is starring Bill Skarsgård as Boy, but voiced by John H. Benjamin as his internal monologue. We have the story of Boy, which I love that his name is just basically the same as Monkey Man's Kid. This one, his name is just Boy. And more or less following a tale of revenge the same way, where as a child, Boy's parents were killed and everything, and he began training under a shaman in order to be turned into the killing machine made to kill the leading force that killed his parents and took away his life. So having grown up with the shaman, he is trained in every way to be a killing machine until he is in his late teens and ready to take on the force that is corrupting the world and taking over this small town that he was once a part of. That's the bare bones for this movie. But Where this one differs from Monkey Man is obviously we have Boy starting from a very young age. He basically, we're introduced to him jumping into the story more or less as John Wick. He is already trained up. He knows how to fight. He knows how to do things. Right. Go on.
No, I was saying right.
Yeah. And, but it has a much more comedic tone to it, as voiced by John H. Benjamin, where Boy is both deaf and mute. You know, in order to communicate with people, he uses sign language and he reads people's lips.
Yeah, I want to correct you there. It's H. John Benjamin.
H. John Benjamin. I always get that mixed up. But yes, H. John Benjamin.
It's all good. Yeah. It's all good. Yeah, I like that dynamic. I like when you think of an action film, well, I guess that lends to the comedy part of it. You don't expect the lead hero to have an inner voice voiced by H. John Benjamin.
Right.
You just immediately start thinking of Bob's Burgers.
Oh, I thought of Archer the entire time. Every time he was talking, it was like, yeah, Archer is just talking through this guy.
You know, I never got on the Archer train, man. I forgot that Archer was around before Bob's Burgers. But yeah, either one. You're thinking of another thing.
Right.
But yeah. Absolutely. So yeah, with this film, man, you know, when I went to go see this, you know, I like Bill Skarsgård and I love him in this role. His face speaks a lot. His face speaks volume with no dialogue. He's pretty great in the role. This film was just, and we'll get into it, but it was just a bit too over the top for me.
Really? See, I can understand that because, yes, this movie is very over the top, but I think walking into it, it fell where I was expecting it to fall. Because when you go in and say, oh yeah, this is going to be just a killing spree starring Bill Skarsgård, who is fantastic in action. He is very good at choreography. He is very good at, you know, as you said, facial expressions. He's very good at contorting himself as well. You know, there's a reason that he plays, you know, Pennywise in the It remakes. You know, he is very good at pulling off this kind of stuff. So when you have him in the leading role, you're already going, okay, this is going to be pretty actiony. This is going to have some insane kind of like choreography scenes. This is going to be a lot of fun. Then you put H. John Benjamin in there as his internal dialogue, and you're just like, okay, this is going to just be silly fun now. I'm all for this. You know, this movie has so much great moments, especially when you add in the fact that he sees his sister as kind of mirages inside of his head that he communicates with. Yeah. And, you know, yes, it's silly. It's supposed to be silly. And I love it for that, because especially when she's going through like, oh yeah, let's put on disguises, you know, what are you wearing? It's a butterfly, you know, to disguise. Nobody's gonna be looking for a butterfly in here. And it's like, okay, it's a dumb joke, it got a chuckle out of me. She like goes off screaming. He's like, no, keep it down. The entire time she's in his head. And it's like, okay, this is setting the tone for this movie right here, that this is just gonna be silly fun with some action mixed in.
Yeah, and I knew kind of what I was signing up for when I read H. John Benjamin is the narrator. Right. I said, okay, ain't no way this is a film you take seriously. So I knew what I was walking into. It just, it just didn't hit me like that. Like you like the moving parts, you know what I mean? I like seeing Famke Janssen on the big screen again, you know what I mean? Yeah. I like that this film also had Charlton Copley in it, you know, who was also in Monkey Man. So we got two films here that he was in. You know, Brett Gelman, he was interesting. As who was he? He was Gideon.
Yeah, he was the writer for all their scenarios.
Right. I thought he was pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting film. It definitely is. I like the backstory of you know, Boy kind of like growing to be a killing machine. I we'll get to it, but the late act twist, I said, okay, that's pretty. I kind of saw it coming, but I was like, okay, that's a pretty good twist. That was a nice storytelling twist, but it's just, I don't know. I wasn't really on the same level as this film's tone. I feel like, you know, with all the violence that was going on and all the kind of like, you know, stupid jokes that was being said, I was like, yeah, this one ain't really for me. It was just too much of a mismatchy tone for me.
Okay. See, it for me, that mismatched tone kind of just adds to the comedy. It has the same feeling as like Renfield did for me, where it's like, oh, it's supposed to be like super like campy fun, and then it's like horribly gory, you know, on top of that. And
I feel like two different movies. Like Renfield, I knew what I was getting into with Boy Kills World, okay? Mm-hmm. But I feel like Renfield had a bit more charm to it. The humor was more funny and less stupid. But, you know, to each his own.
Yeah, I will admit, a lot of the jokes in this movie are stupid. They're very, like, childish jokes, but because of the adult context of them and, like, the seriousness of the situations they're in, it's like, okay, that got a chuckle out of me. It didn't deserve a chuckle, but it got a chuckle out of me. Like when he's in the fortress with, you know, the resistance members and everything, and he's trying to read the lips of the one person. He's like, is he mumbling or is he speaking in a different language? Monkey barber, what? I don't understand any of what's going on. Oh, okay, nod my head. Apparently this is a good thing. No, it's not a good thing. Okay, nope, don't nod your head on that. You know, it's funny dialogue that's just awkwardly placed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's just, it feels too, it's probably paying homage to it or making fun of it. It feels too Hunger Game-ish too.
I can see that toward the end, given how things kind of turn out, because originally the thing that happens is there's a culling where, you know, Hilda is the trying to bring in like the participation of all these nations around her in order to gain control. And as part of that, she does what she calls the culling, which is to annihilate any of her enemies or anybody that can be seen as an enemy to her, which brings more fear into it. And then it later turns into, as, you know, put by her brother, it became, well, we got rid of all the big players, so we were kind of just grabbing anybody that, you know, had even thought of we might be able to, like, get some entertainment out of by killing them. Not so much enemies or anybody that posed an actual threat.
Right. I can understand that. Like, see a film like this, right? You know, like I can see how, and I'm looking at a little bit like of like the production background of it. It's a film that definitely wears its influences on its sleeve, whether it's great action movies, graphic novels, things of that nature. I see the art behind this movie. Mm-hmm. I do. I just feel like it's a big mess.
Okay. I can kind of see where you're coming from with it and everything like that, because there is a lot of like tonal clashes with this, especially when things going on where like the resistance is like trying to create this plan. And, you know, we're listening to H. John Benjamin go, I have no idea what's going on here. Is this something I should understand? I feel like this is going to be very important. And then the mission starts and he's eating macarons. You know,
right. It did like certain things like Gideon helping him towards the end. It's like certain things just didn't make sense. I feel like, OK, this is probably the movie saying, all right, it's time to wrap it up. But I want to ask you, what do you feel about the main televised event sequence? What did you feel about that?
Are you talking about the scene with like the polar bear coming out and like all of the like costume characters?
Yeah. That scene.
It was a little bit strange, but at the same time, when you have H. John Benjamin also like going over it and being like, what the hell is going on right now? None of this makes sense. Is this really what the calling has come to now? It adds to the comedy factor of just even in this world, the person that's trying to go through this is like, what is this and why is it happening?
Man. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Cause I thought that whole sequence was a little weird too. I'm like, okay, this is disturbing, but this is like weird disturbing where I'm not really disturbed. I'm just kind of like disturbed by the fact that this was crafted as a disturbing sequence, but it just comes off very stupid.
Yeah. Well, it does come off as a little bit disturbing and everything. It's strange. I think it's supposed to feel strange because I even love like Melanie's line for it, who is the sister to, you know, Gideon and Hilda in this, where she's like, do you know how hard it is to get, you know, cereal companies to sign off and having their mascots commit murder live on TV? That was all me. I did that. And it's like, that's funny. That's a good joke.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I hear you. So yeah, that sequence was a little weird to me, but here's the thing. And I wish this film would have like kind of redeemed the film for me, but it's really just a great finale. Mm-hmm. I like the reveal of you know, I don't know what they called her. Was it June 27th who was revealed to be Mina?
Yes, who was revealed to be his sister. Yes, the undercover agent. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. That was a twist that, mind you, I saw coming. Mm-hmm. But I liked the way they revealed it. I was like, okay, they went through with that twist and they set it up very well. They set up that I wasn't expecting Famke Jensen's character to be the mother. That was something I was like, oh, that's surprising. And then showing how the whole thing happened with Boy turning into who he is. That I thought was a good twist.
Yeah.
Like that was a pretty good reveal.
Yeah, I'm right there with you with the whole going, oh, that's his sister, isn't she? You know, she got brainwashed by, you know, Hilda and everything to start working for her. And then the twist is, no, Boy is the one that was actually brainwashed and she continued working with her mother and everything. You know, it's like, okay, I guess the twist in the wrong order kind of situation.
Yeah, same. And I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. Now, the final fight scene between now this is where the film kind of sold me, but by this point it was just too late. the fight scene between the shaman, Boy, and Mina, that's a great fight scene.
It is so, the fact that like the way that, you know, who played shaman, Yayin Ruhian, absolutely fantastic. Just the way that he just bends around and everything like that to like get into these like poses of like leaning all the way back to grab Boy to throw his arm around, and then she comes in, tries to punch him, and he just literally just wraps around. It absolutely fantastic. You know, this is the moment in the movie where we got to really see Bill Skarsgård shine with how well he can do choreography and just how flexible he is.
Now, how did you know it was him doing all the stunts? Did he say that?
I guess technically I don't know if he was doing all the stunts. I know Bill does a lot of his own stunts from time to time, so I can believe that he did a lot of that. I don't know for the shaman if it was, but I will say that it's still such a fun scene with however they did that.
Oh, yeah, it's a great scene. See, that's the kind of scene that makes me mad, because I was like, where was this energy the rest of the film? I wanted to see more fight scenes with the past 100 minutes that I spent watching this movie. Where were these type of fight scenes? Why are you saving this towards the end?
Yeah, I can get that. But yeah, it's still a lot of fun and everything. And yeah, because it's mostly jokes when there is some actual fighting going on in this movie, that the fights are more of a joke. Like the reveal that all the characters that were in the like masks and everything were actually like the Rebel Alliance or the Resistance Alliance, whatever they were called in this movie. And that they're just there and they're just like, oh man, Boy, you did a fantastic job. You did everything as we agreed on. And he still just doesn't know the plans at all. I you know, it's funny little moments like that where it's going, yeah, it's don't take this too seriously. And then they have this, a great fight scene at the end. I will say the one guy that is a part of the resistance at the end where he's walking along with Boy and he just goes, you know, I just realized something. You don't talk much, do you? You know, that one got a chuckle out of me. That was a good end zinger for the movie.
You know, yeah, there's some like nice zingers here and there. I mean, there are. But I mean, I just feel like it's just like, all right, one joke, stupid joke, funny joke, stupid mm-hmm. joke, funny joke. I right. feel like it's just going back and forth. Like, okay. Yeah.
For every one that gets a chuckle out of you, there's about like three or four misses that come between them.
Right. I got you. All right, man. Before we wrap it up here, you got anything else to add about this movie?
I will say the post-credits scene of just having mm-hmm. him and his sister sitting down and eating cereal, it reminiscent of the flashbacks that he had with his sister. It was cute. I liked that. You know, it gave a little nice. Smile at the end. But yeah, I found this movie to be fun. It's more of a comedy than it is an action movie, but it does sometimes take the action seriously as well, which is nice.
Okay. I got you on that one. Yeah, I'd agree with you there. Like, I feel like there is charm to this movie. It's not a totally bad movie. I will say this was one where I just couldn't really, I couldn't lock in with it. Like sans that great fight scene at the end.
Mm.
And yeah, man, I gotta give this one a 2, man.
Really? Wow. Yeah, okay.
This is a 2 for me.
See, I must have. I really like this movie a lot more than you did because I put this one as a 3.5. You know, I got some good chuckles out of it. You know, the premise alone of just having Bill Skarsgård as a John Wick esque kind of, you know, killer with H. John right. Benjamin's internal monologue. Which even the joke of like how he got that voice where he's like, yeah, I'm mute and I stole this voice because it was the announcer off of a video game me and my sister used to play. It's like, okay, that's stupid fun. I love it. Keep going. You know, there's a lot that I just love about this movie.
Yeah, no, listen, I saw this movie and I said, you know, we're going to watch this with DFV and this feels like this would be more Brad's jam
yeah.
than it will be mine. I told myself that.
Yeah, it definitely fit more in with what I was hoping it would be and everything. But at the same time, it still has the problems that we mentioned where not every joke lands very well. There's a lot of stupid jokes. It focuses more on the comedy than the action in parts where you're like, oh, yeah, this should be a really action-paced moment. And then it just does not do that at all. Even moments mm-hmm. where you're thinking like, oh, action's going to come up, like when he kills the one person and then you find out, oh, it was like a rehearsal dinner being written and scripted by, you know, her brother the entire time. The joke that grandma was just there, she wasn't a part of the script because they didn't know what else to do with her. It's a funny joke, but
yeah.
The entire premise of that scene isn't funny. It's the small joke at the end of the premise that is like, okay, that got a chuckle out of me.
Right. That scene is so silly. Right. But yeah, I got you. All right. So when it's all said and done, man, it goes without saying, Monkey Man's the winner here.
Oh, yeah. A Monkey Man is just overall a fantastic action movie and everything. It does very well with what it's given, and as a directorial debut, and I don't know if Dev Patel's written or done a screenplay before, or is this his debut as a screenwriter as well?
I think it is his debut as a screenwriter as well.
Yeah, it's absolutely a perfect first outing for him.
Oh, yeah. He had co-wrote a short film before, from what I see here, but as far as, like, theatrical full-length film, this is his first one. Yeah, absolutely, man. Knocked it out of the park.
Yes, absolutely.
One of the best film. Yeah, one of the best films of 2024, for sure. All right, man. Now, there's something I wanted to mention last episode that it went past me, but I wanted to bring it up to you, kind of Furiosa related. Mm-hmm. Now, going into after show here, dude, do you realize in the box office, both Furiosa and Garfield had problems getting people to the box office. Now, mm-hmm. Garfield, I can understand, but people didn't show up for Furiosa.
See, while you're surprised that Furiosa didn't do well, I'm more surprised that Garfield didn't do well, because Garfield is such an iconic character that yeah. people know internationally and everything. It's a kids friendly movie. It came out, you know, during the, you know, a perfect weekend and everything like that, where there wasn't anything else in theaters for families to go
see. Memorial Day.
Yeah.
Hey, you got time. Memorial Day.
Yeah. So that one surprises me. Furiosa, I am surprised that it didn't have a better outing, but at the same time, you know, it is a prequel based on a movie that came out. When did Mad Max Fury Road come out? That was like 2016? 2015?
Yeah.
Somewhere around there. So it's like, yeah, it's been like 8 years or so since that came out, and it's a prequel based on one of the characters that they enjoyed, but again, played by a different actress. And then it doesn't even have Max in it. And it's, you know, there's a lot going against it in terms of like getting people to go, oh yeah, I want to see that new Mad Max movie.
Now, see, in my mind, I go back to Fury Road itself. Mm-hmm. There have been so many years since the last Mad Max movie.
Oh yeah.
And you had a new person playing Mad Max, not Mel Gibson. You had Charlize Theron and this new character named Furiosa being added. And that film soared. So I think the 8 years removed thing, since everybody loved Fury Road so much, I thought people would be like running to the theaters to see what George Miller was bringing us again.
You got to keep in mind, though, when that came out, it came out with a perfect storm, because it was during like mm-hmm. the height of people going to the movies and everything like that, during a time where experimental movies were actually turning out good. You know, people were first time like going out to see those kind of movies, and Mad Max didn't exactly do well the first like 2 weeks of its showtime, if I recall correctly. It was like word of mouth that spread to it. It was kind of like an Avatar situation where it did well the first couple weeks it was in theaters, but it really kicked off when people started talking about, oh my God, this is a Mad Max movie.
Okay. Well, I guess my thing was like, because that's such a great movie, mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, oh, wait a minute. That's a prequel to Fury Road. Hey, I remember that movie. That's when they're on the like train thing and they're being chased the whole way. I want to see that. I figure people will be clamoring to see something from that world.
See, I also think there's some movie theater fatigue going on right now. Because
really,
if you think, look at how things are going for like streaming and everything like that. Like Disney already announced that the new Pixar movie, what's it? Inside Out 2. That's going to be coming out on streaming in 100 days. Like they already announced 100 days after it releases in theaters, it's going to be on streaming.
That's like 4 months. Three and a half months, right. or 3 months or some change. That's reasonable.
Right. So reasonable. But at the same time, now is a time period where like movies like Boy Kills World, by the time I went, oh yeah, that's in theaters, there was already a date for it coming on video on demand and was already out of theaters.
Dog, I went to see Dune Part 2 in Challengers in theaters, both as Zendaya, by the way, within three weeks.
Yeah,
I was seeing these films on demand. I was like, damn, I just saw those movies.
Yeah,
like you know what I mean?
Yeah, I remember talking with you and we were discussing, I can't remember which one, I think it was Dune Part 2. It was like, yeah, I got an ad on Instagram that it's on video on demand like this week, and we pulled it up and it was like, what, 2 months prior is when it came to theaters.
Yeah, I was it 2 months? I thought it was like less than that.
It could have even been less than that. It's insane how quickly things are going to streaming, and I think that people are starting to notice that and go to the theater less.
Listen, now me being a person that loves the cinematic experience, I understand that if they have a setup like yours, and I know you like the cinematic experience too, but if they have a setup like yours, I get it. You're saving money. You're not doling out the money for the popcorn and the ices for the kids. You'd rather stay at home and rent it for $20, or if you got a deal, $10. Whatever. I get it. I totally get it. But it's an experience, man. Like, you know what I'm saying? The films I always go back to, Endgame, Spider-Man No Way Home, Avatar 2. You can't get that at home. You just can't.
I absolutely agree with that. But at the same time, I don't know if Furiosa is that movie that people are like, oh, I'm going to regret not seeing this in theaters when I'm going to be able to watch it on streaming. I'm willing to put money down right now that you'll be able to watch this on streaming by mid-July. You know,
I'd say last week of June.
Yeah. You know. It's how it goes now. It's a weird time to be like, oh yeah, we're finally getting all these great movies in theaters. And by the time you turn around and go, let me book my ticket, it's like, oh no, this is on video on demand now. It's not playing at any theaters. It's now at the Penny Theater that's also half a bowling alley.
Yeah, Challengers is still in theaters, and that's on video on demand. Part of the thing I saw here, and I just let you know, I just saw Furiosa for the second time.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it in Dolby this time. Still holds up, man. Great film, by the way.
That's how I watched it, was Dolby, and I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, I loved it. I even loved it the second time around because I caught more of the themes and the foreshadowing in the film second time around. It's just great film. But somebody on Twitter put a post that said, Furiosa made this much money in the box office. Garfield made this much more money in the box office. And then somebody wrote down below, I hate you all. like for not going to see this movie, like, you know. And I'm sad because I want to see, because I think what was next up is Mad Max the Wasteland, I think is what George Miller was talking about. If Furiosa don't do well, we might not see that, and I'm a little sad because I want him to bring us more stories from the wasteland. Yeah, because at the end of the day, it's still show business. If Dune 2 didn't make money, do you really think we'd even be talking about Dune Messiah coming up?
Right, but at the same time, I'm willing to bet that once it hits streaming, it's going to hit Second Life better than anything else. Because I'm willing to still bet that the only thing...
Does that still count?
I think it does, because if you recall, Dune 1, the first part 1 of Dune, it did terribly in the theaters. At the same time, it did release on streaming at the same time, though. And
yeah, I remember that.
It was like a no-brainer decision that when Warner Brothers came out and they were like, oh no, we are funding Dune Part 2. And everybody was looking at the box office numbers like, what do you mean you're funding it? We thought that this was like dead on arrival in terms of it. And they were like, no, the streaming numbers surpassed everything we were ever expecting, you know.
Okay.
So, okay. Well, if Furiosa hits max and its streaming numbers just skyrocket out of nowhere, I could see them going, you know what? Yeah, let's make the next one, but let's have it be like probably more of a limited theatrical thing and then released on streaming.
Okay. Maybe. I'll hold out hope for that, you know, because I thought, you know, video home release numbers were still looked at, but I didn't know streaming numbers were looked at.
Oh yeah, streaming numbers are basically, I think they look at streaming numbers more than they look at box office numbers these days, because streaming numbers are, you know, people that are constantly watching it in the future. Some streaming movies have higher value than when they came out in theaters originally.
Okay, gotcha. All right, well, listen, I hope you're right. I hope that it does get its just due in the streaming age, or still hold out hope that it'll get its just due in box office. But Bad Boys 4 is about to come out, so I don't know about that one.
I don't think that one's going to hit too big in the theaters right now, unless people are really waiting to see what Will Smith has cooking up after his whole controversy.
You know, I want to talk to you about that. Well, I'm going to see the new Bad Boys. I'm gonna go to a screening. I'm gonna write a review on it. I think this one. I think it could do good numbers. Now, I think it's come to the point where, you know, Chris Rock got his jokes in on Will and his stand up. You know, roasted him, obliterated him and Jada. I feel like it's to the point where it's like, okay, well, you know, the Oscar slap is behind us. Let's see what Bad Boys 4 is talking about. I think that could make numbers.
See, I think it. I'm not going to say that if it doesn't do well, it's not going to do well because of Will Smith and, you know, everything surrounding him. Because I think Bad Boys is starting to, like, because the third movie, if I recall correctly, did not do well in theaters at all. I
thought it did pretty well. It was bad. It's Bad Boys for Life, right?
I believe so, yeah. Because it came out, yeah, like, right... I can't remember if it came out during or right before the pandemic.
2020.
Yeah.
2020. Oh, yeah, so that is kind of, like, around that time. So, okay. Well, let's just go to, like, simple numbers. $90 million box office, 400-something million.
Okay.
Did well.
So it didn't do too bad. Okay. Because I remember it just kind of being when they opted for a fourth movie, you know, reading a couple things like, but why is it getting a fourth movie? But I don't know. Maybe it will do better than I'm predicting.
My answer to that is, you know, why is Transformers getting a seventh movie?
Dude, I have no idea. I've been done since the second one.
You know what I'm saying? Like, listen, it's Bad Boys. It's a franchise. Will and Martin have great chemistry together. It's a money maker. It's Tom Cruise and Mission Impossible. It's a money maker. You know, you can't go wrong with that formula.
I guess that's the
way I look at it. Yeah.
But I'm curious to see how it goes. I feel like, you know, what's I Am Legend 2, I feel like that might be the one where people just go like, oh, this is the Will Smith movie to remember. As long as that one's still in production. I don't think I've heard anything about that in a while now.
I'm wondering how that one's going to go. Because I like Michael B. Jordan. I feel like he has the same kind of charisma as like kind of like Will Smith does. I think Will Smith is a little bit more diverse. Like we could see Will Smith in a villainous role. I can't, outside of Killmonger, I can't really see Michael B. Jordan getting dirty. But, you know, with time, things change.
Right.
But I'll see how that goes.
Yeah. That's the one that I'm more interested to see come out.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. You know, I'm gonna check that out. And anything you've seen recently here?
I have actually watched there's a new documentary on HBO Max or just Max on Max.
Nice.
Called Movie Pass, Movie Crashed.
Oh yeah.
It is a fantastic documentary because
really,
absolutely. Well, we were both huge fans of MoviePass, so
we were.
You know, I believe that was one of the things we talked about when we first met was MoviePass. You know, back then,
it was a once in a lifetime thing, man.
Right, and you know, yeah, it goes through the entire history of the company. You know, when it came up, when all of a sudden the spotlight was on it, how it changed things and everything. It's a really good documentary. There was a lot of stuff that I didn't even know about. Apparently some of the CEOs of MoviePass are actually still under trial for misappropriation of money.
Wow. Okay. See, that's what I was a little wondering about. So is this going to tell us more than what we already know? I mean, it was a model doomed to fail. What else is there to know here? But there's more to the story, huh?
There's a whole lot more to MoviePass that I didn't know about.
Okay.
So I highly recommend it for anybody that was using MoviePass back in the day, or more than likely abusing MoviePass back in the day. Check it out.
Who wasn't using MoviePass to the full extent?
Oh, yeah.
I was going into theaters that I would never go to on a regular day. Being like, yeah, I'm in here now. I got the red card.
Yeah.
Y'all know what time it is. You know what I mean?
Apparently, those MoviePass credit cards are going for big money online, too. I have no idea where mine is, but I don't think I would sell it regardless.
I got it. I would keep it just for nostalgic reasons.
Right. Yeah.
I know where it is. It's somewhere around here, but I'd keep it for nostalgic reasons. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, absolutely recommend checking that out. But besides that, nothing else comes to mind that I've seen recently.
Perfect, perfect. All right, y'all. Well, listen, it's been another great episode of DFV. Y'all take care. You know, keep watching movies. Let us know what you thought about this one, which one wins to y'all. And, you know, take care.